Hi, everyone. This is Gary Barkalow with Sam Williamson for another conversation. And tonight, what we would like to do is start, really just begin to talk about some of the feedback that we were given to the questions that we surveyed about 1,700 people on. We got some amazing feedback, just very honest feedback to these questions. And the one question that we want to talk about tonight, when it comes to offering what God has given us, what is your greatest struggle? So I'd just like to mention a few things that I put under the category of friendship. And so here just were a few of the comments as they answered this question. They said, I just need more partners in this journey. Another person said, it is really lonely on the edge. And I'm sure they were just assuming, living on the edge of trying to bring the weightiness, the glory, the beauty, the strength, the brilliance of my life to the world. Mm-hmm. Another person said, I just lack mentors. There's no one here to teach me and guide me in this. Another that I'll pull out said, I feel I have a specific calling, but when I seek the feedback of others, they usually just reply with a, oh, that's nice. It's very similar to the one above. I just have no mentors, and no one, I just assume they're saying, people aren't taking me seriously, they aren't helping me, they're not giving me feedback, they're not giving me assistance. Let me just mention one more. They said, I feel very susceptible to the lies that I can't make a difference. I hear it all the time, not from people, but from the internal voices that resonate so much louder when I don't have any close brothers shouting the truth over me. I was so struck by his realization that he needed friends who could speak the truth over him that would, in a sense, interrupt the voice of accusation that says you can't make a difference anyway. These just struck me, Sam, how much it was about the need for friendship, deep friendship.
Absolutely, and I think the one that struck me was the second one you read where the person who wrote in said, it's just lonely on the edge. For me, I understand that loneliness. We're not made to be alone. There's something about being alone where you're going through something dark, you're going through a decision, you're going through wanting to be who you are, you're wanting to step into things. And when you feel alone, I think it robs me of strength and energy or of power to walk into something. I think being lonely is very, very hard. And I think it's something everybody shares. You know, we have friends. Guys, we can talk about baseball or football, but that's not the same thing as talking about the depth of my life.
Yeah, and let me throw out a comment that I was told once, Sam, as you say that, and I was struck by it, and that was from actually several different women at Lee's retreats that I had bumped into, and so they weren't together talking to me. These were separate situations, individual women. They all basically said this to me. They said, Gary, I know that the church basically says that men are pretty much isolated, they don't have close friends, they don't have deep conversations. It's kind of what men suffer under. It's part of being masculine, and they have to fight through that. But women, they're different. They have a lot of friends, they talk a lot, they share their lives. And each one of these women said, Gary, it's not true. It's not true. They said, we may talk more, but we don't necessarily talk at a deep level. So I guess what I was struck by is that I think all of us really struggle with a degree of loneliness. And that, I don't think that has anything to do with how many friends we have or
right.
how many conversations we have.
Facebook is the classic example. How many friends do you have? I have 850. I don't, by the way, but that is so symptomatic of the lack of depth in a friendship. And a real friendship is something that goes very deep. It's talking about something soul-revealing.
Okay, so Sam, I'm going to ask you a question. So
What
does a deep relationship, the kind that we need, the kind that these comments are referring to a lack of, how would you define that kind of relationship, that friendship? What would that look like?
Someone once said to me, a friend is someone who always lets you in and never lets you down. I think as I know different people, and even as I examine my own life, I think some of us are better at one than the other. So, for example, in my life, I can't say that I've never let anybody down, but I think my tendency would be I want to help other people, but I don't think I let them in. So So if it's, you know, the two things, someone who always lets you in and never lets you down, I think I was a friend by trying to help people and care for them and, you know, go over and mow their lawn or whatever, but I don't think that I let people in, and as a result, they couldn't be a friend because I didn't let them know me. Now, I also know other people who will always let you in, you know, they're telling you everything, but you don't feel like they're on your side. It's almost like they're revealing themselves for their own sake or something, but not for you. So, you know, they're both really important things. I think for me, I've had to learn a lot more about letting somebody in. It takes work for me, at least, to be vulnerable about who I am, to tell people what's really going on inside me.
Yeah, that Sam, that's, I love that expression. Now, say it again so I can talk about it. How does that go again?
A friend is someone who always lets you in and never lets you down.
Okay. I'm so struck by that because, again, just as you're saying, it seems like we tend to err on one side or the other, right? It's easy for us to talk about our life and what we're struggling with and what's going on in the current moment, but they never ask you about your life. If you happen to say something, they don't follow through with it. They don't sit in the same more and what's going on and what has God up to. They don't do that. Or there's the other extreme, right, where somebody's always there asking you questions. How are you doing? What's that like? What do you think it's about? But they never tell you about their life. I could find myself doing one or the other, staying in one side or the other more instead of just allowing it to go back and forth. But I know with me, sometimes I feel like I can let a person in if they've let me into their life.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can do that. And I feel like if they ask me questions, then I can ask them questions. It's amazing how those two go. If we would do the two, so would the other person.
Right. I mean, someone has to start the ball rolling in a certain sense, take some mm-hmm. initiative in it. I think part of the thing about friendship is I think we really want to be known,
mm-hmm.
but we're very afraid to do that because we've let other people know us and they've let us down.
Yeah. I was actually talking on the phone with a friend at the time, and I had to move away from my computer because I was spending so much time kind of looking at email and not paying attention to the conversation. So I got up, I walked over to a chair, I sat down, and as we were talking, you have to look at something. You're on the phone. If I close my eyes, I'll fall asleep. And so,
is that what you do when we're having discussions?
That or email? Yes. So I looked over my bookshelf, and I noticed this picture that I've always loved, and it's this picture that G. Harvey had painted one time. It was a commemorative photo or a painting for a number of men who died in an airplane accident, and it's these four men riding across a river. Together, it's a beautiful picture. These men are on horseback, they're wearing dusters and cowboy hats, and it's early in the morning. You can tell from you can see the breath coming from the nostrils of the horse and the men, and fall colors. It's gorgeous picture. And the metaphor there is these men riding across the Jordan River into the promised land together, into a new place. And so I've always loved that. Well, then I look down, and there's this picture of a painting of this Indian sitting on his horse, headdress on, bow and arrow, but he's sitting there and you can tell he spotted something, right? He's looking at something. He's about to engage. And I always loved that. Same colors, very, very similar. And as I'm on the phone and this guy's talking, God says to me, Gary, which do you want? And I mean, I was in tears. Well, this guy's talking. He can't see what's going on. He has no idea that I'm actually in a different conversation right now. And I'm in tears because I know God's saying, Gary, do you want to walk deeply with other people or do you want to walk alone because you're alone right now? And again, it didn't feel like a rebuke. It didn't feel like a condemnation. It felt like God's invitation. And I remember saying, God, I don't want to be alone. And I felt like God said, then you invite others. You need to get on the phone with other people. And so I did get off the phone, and I emailed a number of people, and I just basically said, I need you. I need your friendship. And that changed things because I was on a trajectory after enough pain to say, I'm done. I'm done. I don't mind relationships, meaning surface, working, you know, casual, but I'm not doing anything deeper than that anymore. That's the trajectory I was on.
One of the things that strikes me about this is as you were talking, I was looking up a quote that I had written down. I'm, you know, fumbling around on my computer. I was listening to you, though. But it's by Dostoevsky. To love someone means to see him as God intended him. Part of what we need in friendship is not just the self-revealing, being authentic with people. But I think in friendship, other people see stuff in us that we don't even see. And real friends see something in us, and they bring that to life in us. And that's one of the reasons being lonely is so horrible. I think we can't discover who we are outside of relationships with friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Sam, let's talk about this idea of, so what do we do with that? With meeting deep friendships, people who let you in and don't let you down, people who know how to live at that deep heart level where you can get on the phone and within 30 seconds of hearing your voice, they know where you're at. No matter what you say, they know where you're at. Or it, without a word, if you're face-to-face, they can look in their eyes and they can tell if you're doing well, not doing well, you're distant, you're close. You know, how do we create that? Because they don't seem to create themselves, it appears, at least not in my experience or the people I've talked to.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a really good point, is I think that everybody I know longs for it. But I'll bet 95% of the guys I know don't have it. They want it. They long for it. And they might think that it's out there in those circles and they wish they had that circle, but I think that there just aren't that many circles of friendship. I think it's something we have to create. I've had times where I've stumbled into it. You know, I had a roommate my sophomore year in college where we just became instant buddies. We just were instant friends. It happens sometimes accidentally, but I think for the most part, we have to figure out a way to intentionally find a couple people and say, I think that we all need friendship. We need something. How can we start intentionally working towards it?
Yes, going with what you just said, I think it is something we have to create. I think basically the stance of every heart, at least in our culture, is I don't think anybody wants a deep relationship with me, and I don't think that anybody...
You're saying this is the standard thing, is most people think no one wants a relationship with them?
I think that really is. So there's a fear to ask to begin with, and then there's also a fear to offer, that I don't really have anything that deep to even offer another person. The core of it really is, I don't think anybody wants a deep relationship with me, just friendship. And you know what? I'm just so struck by John Lynch in his book, The Cure. In this other book, the name of the book, I forgot the author, the name of the book is The Gift of Imperfection. And they both really have the same definition for shame. They said shame is the belief that I am unlovable. There is something wrong with me. Therefore, I don't deserve to be loved by anyone, nor would anybody want to. And so that goes back to that thing you talked about, right? So, but if you really knew me, this would be a short-term friendship. And the funny thing is, we all suffer with the same thing. So I do think we have to initiate. We have to ask. And what happens if you want intimacy in a relationship with another person, but they don't? I'll tell you, that's the one thing that I know I don't want to experience. I don't want to offer and then have someone come back and go, what are you doing? That's weird. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Let's just go see movies together. Because that would feel, once again, like reinforcing shame in my heart that says, you're not lovable. No one wants to be that close to you. I tell you, one of the things that I did years ago that worked out well was I needed to have a close group of guys here in Colorado Springs that I didn't work with. And so I thought of a few guys that my heart gravitated towards. I just enjoyed them. There's something about them, their life, their personality, their perspective that I enjoyed. And I said, hey, guys, let's go watch a movie. Five of us went out and watched this movie. And then I said, well, you know, let's have dinner after that. So we went out to dinner and we talked about the movie. And not only did I want to see the movie with these guys, but I really wanted to see their heart's reaction to the movie. And I don't mean specifically to the movie. I mean, would their heart be touched by this movie? And would they be open about it? Four of the five guys were, you could just tell their heart connected. They were talking. We were talking at deep level with each other. And the fifth guy was, not really there. Mm-hmm. And really, I didn't really care if you liked the movie or not. It was the heart connection I was looking for. So after that, I said, hey, why don't we get together in a couple weeks? Let's get together, talk some more, catch up. I didn't ask for a commitment. I didn't give a commitment. We got back together, and I started asking a few questions, and I wanted to see if it would be fertile ground for that question to take root. And for four of the five guys, it did. I mean, we went some great places. I was loving it.
Yeah.
And then after really doing this maybe four or five or six times, that's when I said, guys, I said, what if we kind of covenant together to do this every week, that we would walk together? But I really wanted to see, were our hearts in the same place? And to be honest, with the fifth guy, we invited him into this, do this, but he lasted about another 6 or 7 months. But I really think there is something about not demanding everybody be in the same place as us, but walking together for a little bit without establishing this commitment that scares so many people away, and just seeing if our hearts resonate together.
So, but you did something that I thought was, I think was pretty smart. So you go to a movie that's going to have some meaning. You know, it's not Dumb and Dumber. So some movie that's going to have some kind of meaning that you could talk about.
Uh-huh.
And then, I don't know, you know, you went out and had a glass of wine, or you went to your house or something, but you were able to talk about what stirred in you. Is that part of what you did to get guys talking about heart issues as opposed to Dumb and Dumber issues, thinking. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, you know what? I think we can really scare people away if we get, you know, we say, hey, let's get together, have a cup of coffee or whatever, and then we launch in with this deep question. What do you feel like the assault against your life is? Like, some people, that's like cold water in the face when they're not used to it. It almost arrests their heart, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to start with something like a movie. We're just going to a movie. I mean, that's not real scary. And then we just ask questions like, wow, what did you think about Shackleton inviting these guys onto this expedition? And they were from all different parts of life, and he didn't know what he was getting in. So I think there is something about being gracious with our need. Because, again, I think too many times we go, hey, you want to start a group? And we're gonna covenant together. We're going to meet every week for so many hours, we're going to go deep in each other's hearts, and I think guys are going, okay, whoa.
That's going to scare guys off.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? It would scare me off, because I don't want to make a commitment until I understand what is this about and who are these men, and am I understanding exactly what he's saying here? So I just think that's a good solution to inviting people into an intimate, vulnerable relationship without demanding it or scaring them away. Because it goes back to the very same thing we read. What we need to walk in our calling is a group of people that will understand our heart. They see who we are. They can speak it out to us, and more than one voice, several voices. You know, they can pray for us. They can know how we're doing when we're trying not to let people know, and then help us out of that. You know, one of my favorite verses, and I read this compels me. I love this verse. It's 1 Thessalonians 5:14. And Paul says that we are to warn the idle, encourage the timid, help the weak, and be patient with everyone. And I think that is a great definition of an intimate core group of friends together, is that, you know, you guys can, when I am idle in some place in my life where I'm just idle, I could be paralyzed, you know, I'm not moving and I need to be, you can call me out and say, did you call that person? Did you have that conversation? Did you, whatever that is. I need that. I want that. And encourage me when I'm timid, when I'm really scared, to be encouraged to say, we're here. We're here. We're with you. And then when I'm weak, to come along. That's the, you know, not letting me down. Coming in and saying, I'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, just being patient. I love that verse, and I really think that's very much the core of this kind of friendship that we all need to walk in our calling.
I think it is. I mean, Gary, you know that one of my favorite quotes, but it's from Oscar Wilde. It says, a true friend stabs you in the front.
Uh-huh.
But by that, I think there's something about a friend who really is warning you, encouraging you, helping you, being patient with you, but he's doing it to your face, and he's being direct with you. And I think that we're really, there's some of us who lash out at everybody, but I think it's hard to be able to go to somebody and say, hey, Gary, I need to talk to you about this, but I love you, man. I love you. I'm doing this out of my heart for you. You know, being able to be strong but loving at the same time. I think it's a hard thing for people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when it happens to us, you know, when a friendship endures something difficult, it is so much more solid, rock solid, than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. You know, there's something about going through hardships together that deepen a friendship, not just these other moments. But let me read a couple more comments quickly. When it comes to offering what God has given us, what is our greatest struggle? So one person said, I know I have something to offer, but no one else seems interested. The second one was, I try to offer it, and leadership does not see and value what I have to offer. And the third one was, I thought I knew what my uniqueness, my purpose, my calling, my identity was, but my pastor convinced me that I have nothing of value to offer as I am.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, first of all, those really make me mad. I mean, that's my trigger. That's my hot button right there, people saying that to another person and putting them down. But I think what struck me, that when we don't have a close core of people who can speak into our life, that we may look to others more than we should. You know, the pastor to say, I see you, yes, offer it, I'm behind you, I'm with you. You know, or the leadership to say, you do have something to value here, whether it's in work or at the church or it's with the parachurch or it's whatever that is. And we all want that, there's no doubt. I like that. But I think when we are isolated, the need for that is exaggerated by a few, you know, for a few to answer it. And I think we're in trouble.
And to me, they're all tied together. But I'm going to just go back to the first one. I know I have something to offer, but no one else seems interested. And that just reminded me of something I read just this morning. So,
if you can't find it, I have it here, that quote, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you have the quote there, go ahead with it.
Yeah, let me read it, because this is by Seth Godin. It was so good. And so let me read this. It's kind of lengthy, so stay with me, everyone, and perhaps he said, when you expect applause, when you do your work in order and because of applause, you've sold yourself short. That's because your work is depending on something out of your control. You have given away part of your art. If your work is filled with the hope and longing for applause, it's no longer your work. Dependence on approval has corrupted it, turned it into a process where you are striving for ever more approval. That is just so well said, that you have given away your art when you need the validation, the approval, the permission, the open doors of other people, you know, that we would live as an artist to such a way that I'm going to do this because I love it. Whether anybody asks for it, buys it, accepts it, looks at it, it really doesn't matter. I'm doing this because I love it. So, yeah, that was a very powerful quote.
I think that there's some way that God gives us something to give. And we just have to give it. And we just don't, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, the parable of the sower, you know, the sower's just throwing seed out there. We don't know which seeds are going to take root. The thing I like about the sower thing is, I mean, you don't see those little, my wife's a gardener, not me, but you don't see those little plants coming up for a little while, and I think it'd be really easy to just give up. But there's something about, what I like about this is that we don't do it for the applause. We just do it because God's put something on our heart. And we say, if I don't give it, I'm going to burst. So I just want to offer it. I want to give it. Now, I want to do it well. I want to be smart. I want to learn the best way to do it. But in the end, I want to be able to offer it. And this is, again, a reason we need friends. We need friends to remind us about this. Mm-hmm. We need friends to say, Becca, Gary, Jeff, do it. God's given us you, do it. We need it, do it. I mean, I think God has given us the divine yes. We just need to be reminded. We need to be reminded.
Yeah. So I think maybe the question as we come to the end of this call that we need to wrestle with, the question of reality. Do we have these kind of friends that we can truly journey with into our calling? Who will both let us into their life and will not let us down, will come into our life, you know, who will be able to say, I see this about you. It's true. I mean, remember one time, Sam, we were talking, and you said, so how was your day? And I said, I didn't get a lot done, and I don't feel like I worked well today. And you just started laughing like you do.
I love to laugh at you.
I know, and then I can't talk over you. You laugh so long and hard. I think. And you just said, Gary, I don't see you as never not working hard enough, you know? And actually, I needed to hear that because I was just feeling guilty that if things aren't going right, of course, it's back to my sentence, right? If it's to be, it's up to me. And so I was thinking things aren't working right, so therefore I'm not working hard enough. And, of course, you live in that one. That'll kill you. And you called me out, and you laughed me out of that one. And so we just need friends, you know, that can call us out of bad places, call us into good places, call out what is good in us, call out what is bad in us, what is sinful tripping us up, you know. And so I think reality is to ask, one, do we have these people? And then if we can honestly say, yeah, then I want to ask, well, is the answer yes, sort of, or yes, absolutely? And if it's absolutely, yes, great. If it's sort of, well, then, you know, we probably need to stay in there and make this go deeper.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to say God made the Garden of Eden a perfect place, and he puts Adam in there, and Adam is lonely. I mean, this is before sin. This is before brokenness. This is before woundedness. Even Adam was lonely, and I think Scripture is saying that on purpose. It's trying to, Scripture is describing for us when it wasn't good for Adam to be alone. Scripture is saying to us, this is a desperate need of the human heart. It's a desperate need. But I think we all need to work with each other. We really do. We want to help each other find the friends, the depth of friendship, where we have people who know us to the bottom and love us to the top.
Yeah. You know, and I remember there was this quote from a man named Miles Monroe, and he said, while calling is personal, it is never private. And I was so struck by that, right, it is personal. It's who we are uniquely that we bring to the world, but it's never private. One, because we can't even discover our calling alone without the eyes of others. Secondly, we obviously can't give the effect of our life to others if we're isolated from other people. And I just that always has stayed with me. While calling is personal, it is never private. And just to live with that. The other thing, C.S. Lewis quote from The Four Loves, and he said, in each of my friends, there is something that only some other friend can fully bring out. By myself, I'm not large enough to call the whole man into activity. And I just know that's true for me. I need people to call me out. I can't call myself out completely. And I study this stuff. I'm fascinated by it. I think about it all the time. But there are aspects of my life I can't call out. I don't even see them. And I need someone else to call it out. The last point that I'd like to throw out as we finish and then get your thoughts is, you know, so many people say, Gary, I just can't find people here. I've tried, you know, here in my community, in my neighborhood, in my church, whatever that is. And what I want to say with great emphasis is they don't have to be people that you can get face-to-face with all the time. I know that's ideal. I know that's what it should be. But reality appears to be in our day and age, and I find this everywhere, with men and women, I don't care what state they're in, and I find this no matter what country they live in, that it's very hard, if you try to only have people you're face-to-face with to have a deep relationship, you may not ever have it. I mean, work for it, try to create it. But at this point in my life, in my journey, my closest friends don't live here in Colorado Springs. Now, I do have some close friends here, a few. But often the men that I talk with the most are by phone.
Yeah.
And it is amazing. When you get on phone, sometimes you can go farther and deeper, faster on the phone than in person. I don't know why that is. Lee even tells me that with me and her. But I just don't want people to discount or throw out the idea of people who don't live in your same state, that you can still have a very deep connection.
I think it's worthwhile, just out of this discussion, to come to the realization that one of the deepest things we need is friendship. I mean, sometimes just knowing what we need and being able to articulate it can get us off the dime of I'm going to try different things. I'm going to experiment. We really need friendship. We're made for it. And I think this discussion has helped me just realize the value of it again. Just knowing the value of it, I think, is helpful for me.
Mm-hmm. Me too. This has sure been good. And hopefully what we are doing on these calls is the very thing we're talking about, this friendship, where we can talk about deeper things and walk together. So, Sam, thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks, everybody. This is, I found this really encouraging for me. I really appreciate it.